From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. As the school year comes to a close, two of the La Crosse area's largest school districts will start class next fall with new leaders. La Crosse Superintendent Jerry Kember and Onalaska Superintendent John Burnett will retire at the end of the month. They have more than 60 years combined experience in education in their schools and nearly 25 years combined experience as school superintendents. Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Roysom sat down with them recently to talk about their careers, the shape they leave their schools in, and advice they have for their successors. Jerry Kember starts by explaining why he wanted to retire.
You know, I'm interested in continuing being involved with young people and education, and of course music's my background as well, so I'm looking for new opportunities.
What are you looking for? I mean, continued opportunities, what are you thinking?
Well, I wouldn't mind teaching again. That'd be a great experience to have something like that. I'm looking for something with fewer hours and maybe a little less responsibility than we have as superintendent, but I'll still want to be involved. I'm not very good at sitting on the back porch.
John Burnett with the Onalaska School District.
My reason for retiring is, again, somewhat similar to Jerry's. I'm looking for other opportunities. It's been 40 years in the school district of Onalaska, and when I took a look at the goals that I had set for myself and for the school district, I felt that many of those goals had been accomplished. I also teach in the Educational Leadership Department at Viterbo University, and it just seemed like a perfect time to retire from the superintendency, and we're offering something new at Viterbo, where we're offering a superintendency license, so it's an opportunity to take many of those experiences that I've gained through my superintendency in Onalaska and to be able to share those with those students who are moving into their superintendencies in school districts throughout the state.
Since I have you, John, John Burnett with the Onalaska School District, what got you into education? You mentioned 40 years, so that's more than a couple days. What brought you into it? What's kept you in it?
If you go back 40 years, it was a university right here, University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. I had a tremendous passion for both politics and for history, and so majored in both history and political science. Ran into an individual in this university who became my mentor. His name was Bill Merwin, and he had a way of suggesting that the skills that I had needed to be shared with other young people. This was a professor at the university who had at one time taught in the school district of Onalaska, really encouraged me to take a serious look at Onalaska, and back in 1971, that's exactly what I did. And quite honestly, from there, it's just been an unbelievable experience. Every opportunity that somebody could hope for or dream about came my way in terms of being able to be in the classroom for 12 years. I served as an associate principal at the high school for 4 years, a middle school principal for 7 years, director of business and personnel for a few years, and then the last 15 years superintendent. So truly the motivation came through my love of a couple of topics, history and political science, but ultimately, like many people, it's the mentors that you meet along the way that convince you that perhaps you have other skills, which they suggested I had, and I was able to go back to school, and the school district gave me the opportunities to take advantage of those.
Jerry Kember with the La Crosse School District. What was the highlight of your time as superintendent? I know you officially wrap up at the end of June,
right?
And barring anything huge until then, what has been the highlight of your time as a superintendent? You're a superintendent for 7 years?
8 years.
Eight years.
Yep.
Okay.
Not nearly as long as John. You know, I've learned from John. I think the things that I'm most proud of is the fact that we were able to bring to our region a model for preschool programming, which has been replicated across the state. And that's a community-based model where parents and families have a choice of whether they have preschool, voluntary preschool, but also a free opportunity for preschool for all children. It's really leveled the playing field for a lot of kids. But that community-based model has allowed them to have that experience at their private child care center or in our schools. And we're really proud of that, about giving kids that early good start, because our kindergarten teachers were telling us for years that we could see a tremendous difference between the kids that had a preschool experience and those that hadn't. And, you know, up until we were able to do this voluntary free program, only those that could afford were having that experience. And we wanted that for all children. So I'm very proud of that. But, you know, it wasn't my work alone. I worked with a lot of child care providers, quite honestly, the private sector and the public sector, our teachers, other administrators, the Catholic schools, all of us work together to make that possible for our children. And then beyond that, I think we've gone a long way towards providing a lot of choices and options in learning for young people. I think we know that not everybody learns the same way on the same day, and children have passions, too, about how to learn and what they want to learn. And so we've tried to create a lot of different choices and options. Some of our public charter schools, some of our choice and option schools. You know, we have a health science academy. We have a Montessori school. We have a school of technology and the arts. We're opening a design institute next year. And I think parents have valued to have that variety of options in learning. And then for many families, the traditional approach is their favorite approach. And I got to say, even in our traditional schools, there's a lot of innovation going on. It's a very progressive district, and I'm proud of that.
John Burnett, any one highlight or highlights that come to mind?
Lots of highlights. Obviously, over 15 years, there are many things that come to mind. Certainly in the area of buildings, I feel very proud that we were able to build a brand-new elementary school. We were able to do a major refurbishing of Irving Perch, which for all practical purposes looks like another new elementary school, major revisions at the high school. Those are sort of the things that you can visibly see. But probably as important, 15 years ago, we developed a mission statement that says that we're going to ensure that all students acquire skills, abilities, and attitudes. And the statement goes on and on, but the important two words are this word, we're going to ensure, and we're going to make sure that it's about all students. In the last few years, we brought together a culture that I think really reflects a belief in that mission statement stronger than we've ever had, and that's bringing about something known as professional learning communities, a process whereby we're having everybody in the district collaborating, working together, and using that mission statement as a means to say, you know what, this isn't anymore simply about providing opportunities for student learning. It's about ensuring that all students have success and working with each other. We call it a treasure hunt, calling upon each other to what do we do well, what can we learn from other people within this school district, how can we have a culture of collaboration that ensures student success. Probably that would be the thing I'm most proud of.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Newsmakers on WHLA. And today we have an educational twofer. The superintendents of the county's two largest school districts are retiring. And we have with us in Onalaska, from Onalaska, John Burnett, and from La Crosse, Jerry Kimber. Any lowlights, any things that are really kind of bummers? Well, you're a superintendent.
Well, I'm jealous of John because he had great success bringing some beautiful facilities to his community. And we've worked at that, and we've had some successful referendums and done some great things. But probably my biggest disappointment was we're still trying and still want to, and it's still my vision, and I know the vision of others in our community, to have a new Northside Elementary School. And I hope that the next superintendent, and I know our board, will still continue to work with our community to try to find not only a school, but a school that could be a neighborhood center in many ways. Perhaps partner with some other organizations in the community that work with young people and share that facility. I have a community center there, maybe even we have a great medical community here. Maybe we could even have a clinic in that place. So, really trying to do something because, we've done a lot in the school district, and we have built some newer facilities, but not during my tenure. And I think facilities continues to be something that we continue to need to address. We want to have quality, good learning environments for children, where children, when they come to school, they get the message that this community values education, as we all know it does. But we education has changed. And I think sometimes when people drive by a building, they look and they go, well, the building looks the same as it did 50 years ago. What's really changed? And I would invite people into our schools because I think they would find that teaching and learning has changed dramatically during the years that John and I have since we've entered this profession. And it's better. It's much better. We've learned so much about brain research. The whole study of what's effective with teaching and learning. Best practices, we often refer to them. And John mentions professional learning communities, which I think is also a very valuable movement. We used to think about the teacher closing the door and being in their classroom and doing their thing. That's simply not true anymore. We can't operate that way, and we're not getting the best for our kids that way. So a lot of collaboration going on in our buildings, between classrooms, across the district for that matter, doing multi-generational things, having the high school kids do things with the youngest of our students. All those intergenerational things, all that collaborative work is really, you know, it's the old adage, you know, many minds are better than one. And I think that's why professional learning communities are so successful and also a major initiative in our school district as well.
John, any lowlights?
Well, it seems like every couple of years we run into another funding situation for public schools. I've been at this for 40 years, and I've never seen a year yet where anybody believed it was a good time to fund our public schools. I'm so appreciative of our local community, because typically that's what we've had to do every so many years, is go back and ask for additional help. Certainly in the last 18 years under revenue caps, the cliche typically has been you're not going to see additional revenue coming from Madison. You're going to have to rely on your local communities. And we've done that. But you often find yourself, on one hand, I know that I have to be an advocate for the students and the staff and the people that have moved into our community for educational purposes. At the same time, there are a lot of taxpayers out there that are really struggling with their property tax bills. And I find myself pitted between wanting to do what's right for students, but also recognizing that it does place an increased burden on our local taxpayers. And probably that's the greatest frustration. I feel like we've continued to make short-term gains through our local community. We just had a successful referendum. We should be in pretty good shape for the next 3 years. But on the bigger picture, as a state, we really haven't solved this dilemma of how we're going to fund public schools and take that burden off the property taxpayer. And so for me, that's been the low light. I've been on state revenue task force committees. I've been involved in this quite a bit. We just have not yet solved that problem, and it's going to continue to be something that pits school districts against property taxpayers until we do.
Has there ever been a time in your history, administrative history or teaching, where we did get enough funding for schools from the state that we needed?
Well, you know, I think actually we were doing well up until about 1993 when revenue limits came into effect, and our school board was very carefully borrowing when they needed to. I think one of the hardest things we John and I have dealt with over the last since 93 is people are surprised when you have to go out to referendum to install a new boiler or HVAC system in a school. You know, they don't remember us doing that in the 80s and even the early 90s. And our board was very good about borrowing what they needed and then paying it off as quickly as they could. And that system went away. The state took away the right for a school board to do long-term significant borrowing of any kind. And so, you know, we spent a period of time when we were going to our citizens and saying, well, you know, we want to replace some boilers. You know, we got some that were put in service in 1931, and they were built for coal. We really need to, have a better infrastructure for our schools. And again, our community has come to the risen to the task, if you will, and helped us out in that regard. But John brings up a very significant a daily frustration for superintendents, not just John and I. I'd say every superintendent in the state of Wisconsin is very frustrated with the inability for us to effectively fund our schools and do the right things for young people while not being an overburden on your property owner. I'm not so sure your property wealth is any longer a great indication of your ability to pay. I think that was true at one time, and I think it's less true today. But unfortunately, it's still the way the system is driven by property values and the ability to tax. And I do think that this state really needs to take a serious look at how we're funding our public schools and finding a better way so that it isn't on the back of our local property owners.
Any thoughts over Governor Walker's proposed budget for the next biennium? We've heard a lot about it. It's an effort to address state debt. Any thoughts? John, I'll start with you this time.
Well, when you take a look at the cuts, we're talking about, I believe it's $840 million, or roughly $800 million over the next biennium in state aid. Probably one of the greatest challenges for many school districts is the reduction in the revenue cap, which takes a look at just how much money do you have to spend in the school district. It varies by school districts, but you're looking typically around $500, $525 per student. In our school district, that meant that we were looking at an additional $1.5 million. I go back to February, where literally on a Tuesday we had successful referendums and we were able to feel a sense of relief. And by the end of the week, we were basically looking at the budget repair bill and the budget bills and recognizing we were going to now have to cut an additional $1.5 million unless we did certain things. And, you know, if you the rhetoric was that school districts have been given the tools needed to be able to make those cuts, but basically I'm not sure that the math added up for all school districts. In our district, we ended up freezing wages. We ended up employees, and many people would say rightfully so, ended up picking up half of their WRS payments. But on top of that, we also reduced insurance premiums by about 17.3%, which resulted in significantly higher copays and deductibles. Again, I suspect that many people listening would say that's what's happening out there in the, you know, private sector, and it's probably no less fair for that to happen in the public sector. But once again, the sacrifices, if this is supposed to be shared sacrifice in terms of what's happening this budget, certainly the employees of the School District of Onalaska are making the sacrifices needed in order to balance an additional $1.5 million reduction as our share of the state budget.
Jerry Kemper, your thoughts on the proposed state budget for the next biennium from Governor Scott Walker?
Well, John and I are on exactly the same page on this, and again, I would say that's a pretty strong opinion across the state of Wisconsin amongst all school district leaders. I've been here 22 years. We have never seen this kind of reduction in aid per pupil. I mean, typically, in a typical year, we would be looking at a $275 increase, and that was reduced this last year to $200, and now we're looking at, well, for the school district across, a $600 decrease per student. And that nothing is factoring in inflation. I mean, inflation continues. So our costs of everything else, all our supplies, transportation, everything else we do, we all know the cost of gas and how that's gone up. You know, so our costs continue to go up, and our revenues continue to go down. And, you know, we're trying to keep smaller class sizes. We're trying to make this manageable. We have populations of kids who need special services that are very expensive. And all these things added together with these reductions in state aid are serious, and it's going to be very hard to maintain the level of quality programs that we've come to know and appreciate and that I know our parents value. And not only the state aid, but we haven't gotten the final numbers on what's going to happen to federal aid. Now, federal aid is a much smaller piece, but every piece counts now. And so we're looking probably at a minimum a 10 to 15, perhaps even 20% reduction in any federal monies that we've had in the past. And then in addition to that, grant money has dried up. So the grants aren't there. So, you know, we've spent a lot of time, quite a few years now, looking under every rock to find, pull a rabbit out of the hat, if you will, to maintain the services and programs. People have to realize that when you reduce budgets, you reduce staff. And some people say, well, fine, reduce your staff, get more efficient. That's okay, but I got to tell you, every time we reduce staff, at the same time, we're reducing the programs and services to young people. You can't run programs without people there to make them happen.
Who is going to be your successor, and what piece of advice would you pass along, or maybe you've already passed along? Go ahead, Jerry.
My successor is currently our Associate Superintendent of Instruction, Randy Nelson. He'll be fantastic. He'll do a great job. Randy, I've actually mentored Randy for the last 3 years. I brought Randy into the School District of La Crosse as our Associate Superintendent of Instruction. He came here from Rochester, Minnesota schools, where he was Director of Instruction there. And so Randy came from a large district. He understands the type of system that we have here, the kind of support and what we need. He's done a great job over the last 3 years, really done some great initiatives and provided some great learning opportunities for young people. So I think we're going to be in good shape with some really great leadership. As far as advice, I think Randy and I are giving each other advice every day of the week. I would tell him to do everything he can to maintain hope and optimism, because I think that's an important thing that we all need right now. There's a lot to be positive about. There's a lot to be hopeful about. And there's a lot to be really excited about. There's a lot of good happening. Yes, there's some difficult, challenging things we're dealing with. But I know the attitude of the administration in John's school and my schools. We've got some very resilient people who deal with very often. John and I are always dealing with ambiguity, and no one taught us anything in college about ambiguity. But you heard from him a minute ago that we're not sure what's going to happen. And we developed 3 budgets getting ready for next year, not knowing what actually happened, and so we had to build a 4th one. But ambiguity is part of the work. Randy, you're going to have to deal with ambiguity. But I hope you also fill it with pride, with optimism, and with hope, because that's what makes a joyful learning experience for our children first and also our faculty, our support staff. And I think that's the kind of learning environment that our parents want in our schools.
John Burnett.
My replacement is Dr. Fran Finkel. Fran has been a middle school principal for 7 years. He's been in the district 19 years, most recently as the director of instructional services. And once again, when we talk about the future of schools, certainly much greater levels of educational accountability, that instructional leadership needs to start at the top. And this is somebody who really understands what has happened in the district. A big part of bringing in professional learning communities, a big part of a lot of the essential learning outcomes, everything that's happened, Fran has certainly had his finger in it, being a part of that. As far as advice, probably three words: communication, communication, communication. I think of the days when perhaps people viewed schools as people wearing the white hats, and you might be able to say something like, "Trust me, we know what we're doing. We wouldn't be asking for this if it wasn't in the best interest of kids." Certainly in our community, we continue to grow and people move in and move in out of the community. The line, "Trust us, we know what we're doing," has no place in our district. We need to be transparent. We need to be open. We need to communicate. And as long as Fran is continuing to communicate in the way that he has done in the past, there's no question in my mind that we're going to have a very successful superintendent and continue to have a very successful school district.
Onalaska School Superintendent John Burnett and La Crosse School Superintendent Jerry Kember are retiring at the end of June. They have nearly 25 years of combined experience leading two of the area's largest school systems. They were interviewed by Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Roysom. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Stroob, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. If you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.